Hello, everybody, and welcome to Checking Out, where Rachel and Hannah check in about what we're checking out. I'm Rachel.
I'm Hannah.
And welcome back, everybody.
Hello.
It's good to, like, check in with you all.
I know. It's been a while. If you've listened to our last podcast, you know why, but we are still here.
And we're going to just take this episode just to kind of talk about what we're reading. We're probably going to talk about books we've talked about before, but, you know, it's just part of quarantine life, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
But before we do that, we just want to basically make a statement about Black Lives Matter, saying that Black Lives Matter, indeed. And that it's a really important time for us as white people to be checking our privilege and ourselves. And don't be afraid to use Google to read lots of things that have already been written to help you educate yourself. And don't rely on your friends of color to do that education for you.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely an issue that's been around for a really long time, even though you may not have been aware of it. So definitely don't feel like this isn't new to everyone, okay? It's new to a lot of people, but it's not new to everyone. So what that means is that there are a lot of resources out there for you. So if this is opening a lot of doors to you, if you are starting to realize how prevalent racism is in our society, put that internet to work. A lot of libraries are opening up. Check out some anti-racism books. Read books by Black people, about Black people. So you can learn to check your own privilege, so you can open yourself up to an experience that is really different from yours, that we don't, as white people, we don't necessarily always have a good place to set in to empathize with that.
Exactly. Just
because that experience can sometimes be really different from anything we experience. You know, if I get pulled over, my experience is going to be very different than if a Black person gets pulled over, even if we got pulled over, you know, by the same police officer for the same thing. So it's really important that we educate ourselves, that we learn the way that society has set up these differences so we can try to work to help dismantle them.
And they're everywhere. They're in business, they're in schools, they're in just everywhere. And so no matter what you do, no matter what your job is, it's so important that you learn about how things like microaggressions can show up, you know?
Yeah.
Because half the problem with microaggressions is that you don't realize you're doing them.
Exactly. It's hard to, like, you can't not do it if you don't know you're doing it. So part of the work is educating yourself. It's a huge part of the work is understanding not just how the system works, but how you're complicit in it. Because if you are a white person, you are complicit in it. Even if you are, like, the kindest, sweetest, sweet baby angel straight from heaven, you are complicit in it. And so Absolutely. It's important that you understand both of those things and then you work to figure out how you can do better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to throw a link in the show notes. It's written specifically for teachers, but there are a lot of books in there that are not just for teachers, like not just for educators, but are good books like The New Jim Crow. And there's a book called Blind Spot, which is a really good place to start if you've never really confronted your own prejudice as a white person. That is a really good place to start because it kind of takes it a little bit easy on you while still calling you out. So if that's kind of where you need to start, you can. And then there's also a book called Me and White Supremacy, which I believe I'm not currently reading it, but a group I'm in is reading it. And I believe it's broken down like by each day. Like it's like 30 days of work that you do.
Oh, cool. I'll have to look into that. I think it's been a Kindle deal too lately. So if you have a Kindle and you're looking for something, I think that's actually been on sale the past couple of days.
Yeah. And like find a group of people who also want to learn about this stuff, you know, find like the article that I'm going to link. One of the things they give you is like example questions to ask for teachers. And a teacher group I'm in is reading a book all together. And something I've realized is how much I can just learn from other people sharing experiences and sharing and asking questions, you know, And like, don't put all of that burden on your friends of color, you know, like they have lived this experience their entire life, you know? So like, before you ask those questions, see if you can find someone who that emotional burden is not on to help you wade through some of this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think whenever you're wrestling with something, you know, like this, when you have to confront like the ways that, you know, you are racist and you're complicit in a racist system, that can be really hard work to do, especially if, you know, like I said, if you are like a really great person and you really don't think you're a racist, you know, you're not out there like waving the Confederate flag and stuff, but these microaggressions, right? It can be really difficult and really scary to try to do that work, to confront these things about yourself that you don't want to confront. We don't want to think we're bad people. And it helps to do that in community. It helps to do that with people who walk alongside you, who can say, oh yeah, I've done that too, but I can help catch you next time you start to say this or do this or whatever. Everything's better when we can do it with each other.
Exactly. No, 100%. And so it's just really important. I think, you know, reach out to your friends of color and just check in on them, you know, your BIPOC friends, and be like, hey, how are you doing? Because this is a really triggering time for them, you know?
Yeah.
And they are often being forced to relive trauma because while a lot of people think that reposting videos of the trauma happening is a way to get the word out, it actually often re-traumatizes people. It's really important that we check in on those friends of ours and just say like, hey, I'm thinking about you. How can I support you? Do you need anything? And that's a really good step, I think.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And just to like, I think even having interactions that aren't always aren't necessarily always about this. Like, it can be really difficult in the midst of trauma when everybody just wants to like talk about the trauma and you're like, oh my God, I please need a break. Can we not talk about this? So just like check in on your friends of color and like watch an old episode of The Bachelor with them, or, you know, bring them a bottle of wine, like help do normal things, you know, support them in all of these ways.
Absolutely. And if they want to have those conversations with you, then have them, you know?
Yes.
And something that someone told me that I thought was like really pertinent is like, basically, like, now is not the time to choose to sign offline. Like, yeah. Now is not the time to choose and say like, okay, barring a matter of life and death, which we've talked a little bit about mental health. My mental health has been really rough. So it currently is almost like life and death for me about whether or not I'm active on social media. So that, barring a situation like that, if it's just because seeing this makes you uncomfortable, you need to be even more present than you ever have been, because people of color don't have the opportunity to just sign off and not face their daily reality of racism.
Yes, exactly. And if you're uncomfortable because you're uneducated, then listen, be present and listen, you know, pay attention to what people are saying. Use, like we've said, use this time to educate yourself, but you can't just, you know, stick your head into the sand and hope it'll go away.
Exactly. Because it's not going away. It hasn't gone away. Yeah. If anything, it's just gotten stronger, you know. And the other thing I would say is, I know people are very well intentioned, but please do not post pictures of protesters with their faces unless they have given you permission. It can be very dangerous for protesters to have their bare faces out on the internet, considering the level of racism we're facing right now. Not we, but the BIPOC community is facing. So, just be very mindful of that. You don't want to put anyone in harm's way intentionally or unintentionally.
I'm really glad you said that, because I would have never thought about that. That's not something I would have been worried about, or that would have come across my mind. So I'm glad you said something.
Yeah. Like, if you do some research, a lot of the protesters in Ferguson have actually been killed.
Oh, wow.
Or gone missing, basically. So if you aren't familiar with Ferguson, definitely Google Ferguson, Missouri. There are a lot of books out there about that. It is very similar to what's going on now, but it was more focused on one community in Missouri. But a lot of the Ferguson protesters have died, and there is not, like, I'm not trying to get into like conspiracy theories and stuff, but that's a fact, right? That they have died. And so if we can remove the chance of that happening, conspiracy theory or not, right, from other protesters' lives, like, let's just make that extra conscious step. Now, if a protester tells you, if you take the picture and the protester's like, you can put it wherever the heck you want, then go for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But don't post pictures of people's full faces without their consent.
Yes.
So. With that said, we'll link some resources in the show notes. We have an author interview today from our friend Lauren A. Rowe, who we're so excited to bring on the show. And we are hoping that our next episode, we can talk about some Black Lives Matter books, some Own Voices books that maybe can help bring you into the movement a little smoother.
Yes, for sure. So Hannah, do you want to start with what you're reading?
Sure, I can start. I feel like my list of books that I'm currently reading is the same as what I said last time. I have like finished some stuff, but like I'm reading longer books, so it's taking me forever to get through them.
Welcome
like,
to the Goldfinch, friend.
I know. I'm still reading Moby Dick. I'm still reading Wolf Hall. I'm still reading The Talisman by Stephen King. I'm hoping to finish that today, though. It's going pretty fast, so we'll see if I can buckle down. I've got like 400 pages, but it's a mass market paperback, so it's not like a full 400 pages, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense.
Still reading In the Still of the Night by Anne Rule for my true crime book club with my mom.
Hi, Hannah's mom. Shout out to Hannah's mom.
So yeah, that's what I'm currently reading. I have finished two books, so that's very exciting.
Ooh, what did you finish?
I finished We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson. Shirley Jackson is a queen in every sense. I forget how much I love what she writes because she wrote like in the 50s and 60s, and she writes like messed up stuff, like Gillian Flynn kind of messed up, you know? Ooh. So she like has, but it's, her work is subtle and scary all at the same time. It's not like in your face with its horror, and it's not graphic, but she sets up this like creepy atmosphere in all of her books that just gives you chills. It gives you chills. She's so good. So yeah, if you haven't read We Have Always Lived in the Castle, do it. It's only like 150 pages too. It's really short.
Ooh, and spooky.
I know. It's really good, like, if you don't like hardcore horror, or if you don't like a lot of gore,
so
stuff like that. Yeah, Shirley Jackson's more your jam.
I like Agatha Christie.
Yeah, because I think she's not quite like Agatha Christie because her books aren't, like, mysteries per se. Okay. I mean, they are definitely supposed to be, like, very scary. Like, The Haunting of Hill House, which is another one of her more famous books, was, like, the inspiration for The Shining. So she's definitely more of, like, a horror writer.
Okay.
But because it's the 50s, also, like, I mean, it's not super, in like, graphic horror the way we think of it, if that makes sense.
No, 100%.
It's very atmospheric.
Do you want to know something that's going to horrify you?
Yes.
I have read the plot synopsis of The Shining, but never actually read The Shining because I felt like I was missing out not knowing what was happening.
There's no shame in that. I mean, I love The Shining. I'll read The Shining every year in the fall because I think it's just like, it's such an interesting book. But it's so good. God, I love Stephen King. He's not without his problems.
No.
But God, he writes a great story.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The other book I finished is for my library's book club. We read Song of a Captive Bird by Jasmine Darznik.
Ooh.
And it's – so Darznik is Iranian. And I'm going to see if I can pull up the synopsis of this on my Goodreads. Remind me to rant about my Goodreads when I'm done with this.
Oh, God. I just remembered.
So this book is about this Iranian poet in like the 1920s. I think she was born in like the 1920s, 1930s, and she passed away in 1960-something.
Okay.
Her name is Farouk Farrokhzad. I think I'm saying that right. I listened to the audiobook, so I feel more confident in my pronunciation. but basically, so Farouk was a real poet, and basically she like is this feminist poet, and she writes this like, she writes really honestly about her experience as an Iranian woman, like, and her affairs and her divorce and, like, you know, she becomes this guy's mistress, like, all of this stuff. And so she, obviously, like, everyone in Iran hates her, right? So it's a lot about, like, her, activism in her life and what it's like to, you know, feel that, you know, she's called to these things. She's called to write about her experience. She feels like she needs to be, honest with herself in her life and, like, what she feels she should or shouldn't do, but she struggles with the way her culture judges her for that. And it sounds like very book clubby and very like, oh, oppressed woman decides to be a rebel and blah, blah. But it is like, and I was really skeptical about it. But it's a really good story. And the audiobook was really good. It sounded like somebody was just like sitting there talking to you about her life, you know?
I love when you read nonfiction books that feel like that.
But this is actually fiction.
Oh.
Yeah. But so Fru was real, and this is just like a fictionalized retelling of her life. Yeah.
So like kind of like the whole like Z, the novel about Zelda Fitzgerald kind of situation.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Because the author ended up, because she knows Persian, she actually translated a lot of Fru's poetry herself.
That's very cool.
So she could have like a really a deeper connection with like what Fru was feeling and what she was writing about, in a way that she felt like she couldn't get if she just read previous English translations.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was really good.
So yeah, that sounds good.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh wait, now, do you want to talk about your Goodreads now?
Yes, because you guys are the only people who will understand the horrible mistake that I've made. I desperately needed to clean out my Goodreads, okay? I've had this Goodreads account for 10 years. So it's the TBR part of it is just out of control. And what I really wanted to do was just trash out the TBR part and restart it. And because I am a dumbass, I just deleted all of the books. All of them.
You just called yourself a dumbass.
I was. That was the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. And as soon as I hit okay to do it, I was like, oh no.
That's not what I meant. Abort, abort, abort.
And there's no abort section. And I was like, oh my God, this is horrible.
So I got a text from Hannah about this and I literally gasped. I actually, like she said, I did this and I sent her a picture and I was like, oh my God.
So I have like an old export from when I started working on my library thing of my Goodreads data from like early April. So now I was able to like import that and import stuff from library thing. It's so like now I think most of the books are there and luckily I've kept pretty good reading diaries since 2012, but I have 10 years of Goodreads data to sort through. So everyone pray for me.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
It's dark times over here.
Oh my God, it really is. It's dark times.
Goodreads times.
Right? Oh my God. Well, on that note, should we head into our interview?
Yes, let's do it. Let's bring some joy into this podcast.
Okay, so we will be back after an interview with Lauren Rowe.
All right, everybody. I am so excited to have our very first author interview on Checking Out. Today we are joined by my friend Lauren A. Rowe, who I actually went to high school with, and she just released her first book. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're so excited. Right? Like, Hannah and I are just like, oh my God, we feel so official now. So, okay, the book has been released. Tell us about it. What is it about? What's the title? What's the gist?
Yeah, so the book is called Where the Truth Lies. And basically it follows two women's journey through life. And we're kind of examining their growth and their struggle to understand and take control of their mental health. And then one of the women's journey suddenly ends and we don't really know what happens. And then the universe and the book, as you dive into it, unfolds what truly happened to her. So you can find out where the truth lies.
Ooh, twisty.
Very cool.
Right? Hannah's like, oh, you piqued my interest.
Tell me more.
Hannah's like, just read me the book. It's fine.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your writing process. I'm always so impressed when people manage to write a book, because I'm lucky if I can write a journal entry. So I'm always curious about what makes people like able to sit down and write this whole thing.
God, yeah. So I've been writing my whole life. It's always been something that I've been super into. And honestly, throughout writing this book, I pulled a lot of stuff from like when I was 15 and journals I still had, thanks to my mom. And, you know, just like stuff from various parts of the chunk of my life that I've lived. So the main thing that made me write this was in December of 2018, I almost died. I was in the ICU for a couple days. I had ulcers that ended up, I don't know, like perforating my stomach, and I lost half my blood supply. It was awful, awful. And after that, I really like deeply struggled with, why am I still here? You know, I thought of all of the innocent people that didn't deserve to die and had like a bad draw in life, and I somehow survived. So obviously that's going to take a huge toll on someone's mental health. And I kind of felt like there had to be a purpose that I was still here, and I had to do something meaningful with that. And, you know, there were a lot of things that I felt I still wanted to do, one of which being traveling. So my husband is amazingly supportive, and he is always down to just like on the weekend, get in the car for 8 hours and drive somewhere new. So we do a lot of traveling, and I don't know, traveling is like a refresh for my soul. It's something that's so important to me. You get to kind of step out of your life and maybe like look at others and how they live and just see different things that you wouldn't normally see. So I started writing a ton about nature and traveling and all of that. And then August of 2019, our son started kindergarten. And at that time, you know, it's hard for your kid to start school. And then I also was going through like a very, very bad friend breakup. And those are like just as personal as breakups.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was so hard. And I, again, just like leaned into writing about it because it was so therapeutic for me. So I don't know, throughout that, all of these things were happening and I was still really struggling with my mental health. And I went to see my tattoo artist, and she could tell. I mean, she knows me. She's known me almost a decade at this point. And she gave me a list of like psychiatrists and therapists and all these different specialists that I could reach out to. And she doesn't know it, but she probably saved my life at that moment.
Yeah.
So I took her advice and went and saw her psychiatrist and most amazing man in the world. First doctor that I felt actually saw me and wanted to help and didn't want to just like drug me up. So that, all of that like mushed together, I started to get better and I started to really take writing seriously. And I workshopped some ideas with my dad, and he actually gave me the idea for what is the like twist ending part. So I took all this writing that I had throughout my life and mushed it together. And it's so hard because there's so many things that I care about and feel like I wanted to say. So there's like some aspects of true crime, and there's a lot of stuff about me and like my relationships in there. But the main focus of the book is mental health. And the only thing I care about is that if this can get into someone's hands and teach them that it's okay to struggle with your mental health and it is okay to get help, that's all I care about. Because I just want to help people, and I want this to be something that my son can look at and he can, you know, maybe understand his mom better and maybe understand himself better, because most likely he's going to end up with the same genetic makeup and the same mental health illnesses. And, you know, I want him to have the same mentality where, yes, I have a mental health illness, but it does not have me.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talk a lot about mental health on here too. Like,
oh, yes.
So important. So important, especially right now during quarantine. I mean, I can't imagine the people that are struggling, and that's why I felt like now's a good time. I released it on my birthday. I was like, you know what? Let's do it. This is what I call the best and worst of my 20s. So it was my 29th birthday. I figured, let's get it out in the last year. Let's get it out during a time where people really do need to be aware of mental health and focus on it. And maybe it'll just help someone.
Yeah, that's awesome.
No, 100%. Like, you and I have talked about this, but we both have talked about how passionate we are about mental health. And Hannah and I did a whole episode on reading and mental health. It's a wild ride. So you said you've been writing for, like, your whole life. But is there, like, a moment when you knew, like, I want to be a writer, I want to publish a book, like, I want to, like, do the thing and not just do it, like, on the side?
It's always been therapy for me. It's always been either I'm like vomiting up all of my feelings onto the paper, or I'm taking my mind off of everything that I'm feeling by like making up my own world or like rewriting scenarios in a way that I wish they would have gone. And my parents will attest to the fact that I've always kind of had a flair for the dramatic, and I think you need to have that as a writer. So I don't know. I just, after being in the ICU, I was like, what do I have to lose? You know, if I publish it and no one reads it, that's fine. But if I publish something that I feel is good and it's something that I'm proud of, that's all that really matters, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. So tell us a little bit about what the publishing process was like for this book. You self-published, correct?
Yep. Yeah, so self-publishing was super, super important to me. My husband's dad, my father-in-law, he self-published a couple of books of poetry, and I'd mentioned writing, and he, just like his son, they're all super supportive. So he instantly was like, you can self-publish, you know, you don't have to go through someone big, you can do it yourself. And it was kind of the first time that anyone introduced that idea to me. So it was super important for me to do that. And I did it through Amazon. It was super, super easy. There was no like upfront charge or anything. The only cost was I copywrote my book, which was $65. And I'm glad that I did that to have that protection over my book.
Yeah.
But, I mean, self-publishing, it's not hard. The hardest part is honestly the editing. Once I got it done, I printed it out, and my dad went through it and redlined, and then my husband, and then we literally sat in our living room with the laptop hooked up to the big TV, and we went through line by line by line, 3 nights after work until 10 p.m. Like, it was a labor of love, and I am so grateful to my dad and my husband for helping me out with it, because it's not easy. And I mean, my book is only 84 pages. It's nothing huge, but it does take a lot of time to go through. So, I mean, if you put the time into it and figure out your idea, there's nothing that will stop you. You can do it through Amazon and put it in the hands of millions of people. I mean, they're worldwide. So it's a great, great option to have.
Do they charge you more to make it available on Kindle Unlimited, or you just check a box and say it's fine?
Yeah, you just check a box. So they, like, I set the price, I set the pre-order day. I had to turn in the manuscript by a certain day, but they have, like, an editing program. They have a program to help with the cover and everything. Like, they're rock solid with all of their support for authors, honestly. And they've got, like, a whole reporting page. I can see how many pages have been read. It's awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's a really, really, really great opportunity.
I had no idea it would give you that much data. That's super neat.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a data nerd over here, so.
You're right. I love it. And I can tell there's someone in the UK that's reading my book. I'm like, yes, like, beyond the US now.
Sometimes when I look at our stats, like, I think there's someone in like Bosnia who has found our podcast. So, hi to whoever you are, but that is wild. So if you see someone from Bosnia reading your book, like, you're welcome.
That is so cool.
It's crazy how the internet has kind of allowed us to like this is sort of a tangent, but we do tangents on our show. But it's kind of crazy how the internet has allowed us to like keep in touch with people that I think like if we were in our parents' generation or even the generation before, like after our parents, but before us, like mm-hmm. it really wouldn't have happened. Like you and I haven't seen each other in person in like 14 years.
Yeah.
And like we would have never like kept in touch, I don't think, if it wasn't for things like social media.
I know. I absolutely love social media for that. I mean, I know that the internet can be a pretty toxic wasteland, but there's so much good if you can find it on the internet. I mean, there's so many people that I still can be in touch with, and they can see my kid grow up, and
it's especially great when
Oh, God, me too. He's all of my sass. He's totally me, and I know where he gets it from. It's great. I told him the other day that he has the same fire in his belly that mommy has, but he has to learn to not be a dragon.
And Hannah and I met online. Like, we met through Litzy, which is a book app, and then we just kind of stayed in touch. And then the first time we met in person was at her wedding.
Oh my God.
She was like, fly out to Cincinnati for my wedding. And then my best friend Charlotte and I were like, okay.
Amazing. I actually met my husband on the internet. Like, that's just how things are anymore.
Yeah. It's crazy. All right. So what do you do when, like, what do you like to do when you're not writing? Like, obviously, besides raising your child, like, you know, that's a thing you have to do. But, like, what's something you like to do?
I honestly, we pretty much just spend time together, like, as a family. Even before quarantine, we're kind of, my husband is more of an introvert, and I'm more of an extrovert with introvert tendencies. So we hang out at home a lot. We love binging all sorts of stuff. The Office is what we're currently going through for, like, the third time in our relationship.
Ooh, me too.
I love it. It's mentioned in the book as well because it's just so good. But I don't – we just like either being at home or being out on the road. We love road trips. We've been to 18 different states together.
Wow.
D.C., which doesn't really count as a state, but it counts.
It does count. It should be a state.
It's important. So we did all that when Obama was still president. So we like hiking. We're kind of spoiled here in Colorado because we have like endless options to go hiking, and you can drive 20 minutes and be at this amazing reservoir, and it's awesome. So we do that. I do a lot of like lounging around with my cat. We watch a lot of true crime documentaries together. I love painting. I just finished a piece that I was working on for my mom right before the book. I always like to have something creative going on. I'm a very, like, go, go, go person.
Yeah. No, I feel that.
So our closer question that we like to ask people, tell us what you're reading.
So I already told Rachel, and it's going to make you laugh as well, but I am currently reading in physical book, Helter Skelter, which
yes!
is cute.
Murders,
as you know.
That immediate reaction is just Hannah.
Yes, it's so interesting. It's so thick. It's a huge book. It has pictures. It has everything. And, like, it's so hard for me to work through because I'm constantly, like, Googling things as I'm reading it just to try and like piece it all together instead of just reading the book front to back. Just so much that happened with that case. So
yeah,
that's a physical book. We're moving, so I had to pack all my books. So right now I'm working on my audiobook, which is Parenting with Love and Logic. Really good job there.
It's a nice dichotomy, you know, parenting with love and logic, Charles Manson. It's fine.
Mass murder. It all balances.
Yeah, I'm telling you that when Hannah is a parent, she will be doing the exact same thing you're doing right now.
100%.
Learning the psychology so that I know what not to do. I mean, Manson had, like, a terrible childhood. So
oh, my God. So messed
I'm
up.
I'm just trying to not have that happen.
You're like, but really, I read true crime books, so we know now how to not mess up my kid. I'm really not that screwed up of a person.
I know, like, don't hit him in the head. After wetting the bed, there's a big issue. Ted Bundy was like 4 or 5. I don't quote me on this, but he put like a bunch of knives around his aunt while she was sleeping.
What? And, like,
if my child ever did that, I would lose my mind. Like, yikes.
Oh, God. Hannah, did you know that?
No, but it doesn't surprise me because he is just a total piece of garbage. Lauren, did you ever read Baby Teeth by Zoe Stage?
No.
It's about this woman whose kid is like 6 and it turns out she's like a sociopath, like straight up trying to murder her mom, and the dad doesn't believe the mom. Oh, and the girl acts like fine around the dad. And it's so good.
I'm going to have to check that out. I love books like that. And I have 2 Audible credits right now. So.
Wait, Hannah, what are the books that you were reading? The ones that were like based off of killers, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. It's the Meg Gardner Unsub series. And so the first book is called Unsub, and it's basically like, it's loosely based off the Zodiac Killer. So it's about okay. this serial killer in California, but his name is the Prophet, and he works a lot with the Mercury symbol. And then the second book is loosely based off of Ted Bundy. Yes.
And it takes place in Flagstaff, right? Like in Northern Arizona?
Oh, yeah, nice. Parts of it.
Yeah, Hannah was texting me like, wait a minute, there's snow in Arizona? Wait, what? Your state's confusing. What?
It's not right. Flagstaff actually gets the most snow in the country.
That's not what? Right.
Yeah.
No.
I have problems with this.
I'm going to have to Google. Hold, please.
Okay.
99% sure. Because I read it.
No once. Way.
No.
If that's true, Arizona and I are in a fight.
Hannah's already coming out to Arizona just to, like, experience
ask some questions.
Arizona is so insane because there's so, like, there's so many different things in Arizona.
Right. You can go to, like, you could go to the Grand Canyon where it's, like, actually chilly, and then you can go, like, all the way down to Mexico.
Yep. It's not right.
So, it says truly historic, indeed, Flagstaff officially picked up 35.9 inches, the highest single-day snow total in 126 years. So that was from the Washington Post in 2019.
Okay, so in 2019, Flagstaff had, like, the day, like, had the most snow ever in history.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Arizona and I are in a fight.
You should just move to Flagstaff. It's the same thing. And I'm like, no.
No, it's really not. No, hard pass on that one. Okay, so Lauren, where can we find you? Where can our listeners buy your book, read your book, support you?
So I am on Amazon. It is Where the Truth Lies by Lauren A. Rowe. And then I'm on Twitter as @LaurenAuthentic, and that's all spelt the regular way. And then I'm on Goodreads and Library Thing as Lauren A. Rowe as well.
So you can find this book wherever. It's on Kindle Unlimited. So if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free. It's like $5. So I bought it. I highly recommend you buy it or just read it. But yeah, so I'm so glad that you came on today. This was so fun.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, and I wish you all the success with your book, and I can't wait to see more, like, pictures of your son, because I just love him. And, you know, I just love everyone's kids. Like, people are like, I hate when people post their kids on Facebook, and I'm like, no, I love it. Don't do it more.
I was like, I love seeing everyone's babies, and, like, people keep having more and more, and I'm a one-and-done girl. Like, I'm good. But I'm so glad to see everyone else's babies. And it's so crazy that we're all grown ups at this point.
Oh, like, I can't deal with the fact that, like, next year we're all turning 30.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. My dad was like, the 90s were 30 years ago. I'm like, shut up.
No, they weren't. They were 10 years, or it's like, I know Lauren will relate to this, but Lauren, it's like when, like, My Chemical Romance announced their reunion, and they were like, the last time they toured was this long ago, and you're like, what? Oh no! God.
Well, I kind of have a theory, and this is a crazy theory, but...
Go for it.
I feel like My Chemical Romance, with that weird video with, like, the Ouija board and everything, that happened, and then coronavirus started, so...
Stop!
Not saying My Chemical Romance started the end of the world, but, like, it happened pretty close after.
I'm not saying that they didn't either.
Like, everyone that wanted to see their tour, not happening. So
so that must be it, right? That's it. That's the end of the story.
The video was confusing, so.
Well, thank you so much again for joining us. Everybody, go check out Lauren's book. I can't wait to hear what you guys think about it, and definitely hit her up on Twitter or Goodreads or Library Thing and let her know what you think. So thank you again, Lauren.
Thank you, guys. You have a great day.
You too.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Lauren. She's such a delight.
She's so cool.
I can't believe that we have an author on our show.
I know. I feel like we're official podcasters now.
Oh, my God. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? Okay. So,
tell me what you've been reading.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, the good news is that I am basically – okay. The good news is that I have finished one of the long haul books.
Yay!
I finished The Tenant of Wildfell Hall.
You did it.
I did it. I did it. The BBC miniseries was much better. if only because I actually knew what was happening. I would also like to report, because I know how much you guys care, that I am currently, I haven't updated my Goodreads in a hot second, so I'm going to look. Okay, it was right. I am about 85% of the way through The Goldfinch. So hopefully by the next time we record, that book will be just a memory of the past.
Yes. You're so close. Yeah.
Oh my God. I just have to finish it. Okay. Books that I finished. I read a lot this month. So pardon me if we didn't really talk about what we've been reading in our last episode, did we?
No.
Okay, cool. I'm just going to look through my, May books. I didn't really get to talk about this on the last episode, and I wanted to. Amy Kaufman is like one of my absolute favorite authors ever. And so I finished a book called Unearthed by her and Megan Spooner. She does like really good author like duos, if that makes sense. She writes, if you're not sure if you're into space operas or you're just like kind of curious, she writes the best ones, in my opinion, like exactly what I'm looking for, which is like fighting and romance and like twists and turns and like other planets but still human situations, right? Mm-hmm. So Unearthed is about this girl and this guy who, so the girl is like a scavenger situation and the guy is like an academic, and they end up on this planet together, which, you know, twist of fate, whatever, they end up there, and they are trying to figure out, there's this alien race called the Undying who has like sent messages to Earth, and they are trying to figure out like what the messages were, and there's like all these little like puzzles that they have to get through. It was like sort of underwhelming in the beginning, and then at the end the twist happened, and literally like it said that I was like 80% of the way through, so the twist happened and I was like, oh my God, let's go, right? No. The last 10% was freaking like annotations and like, so when, and literally it was like acknowledgements, and the first line of the acknowledgements was like, sorry to do this to you. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me?
You are not forgiven.
You're not forgiven, like at all, except for the fact that the second book is already out. So that I guess I will forgive you. Definitely like Undying by Amy Kaufman and Megan Spooner. I was freaking out when I finished it. I did finish North and South by Elizabeth Gaskell. Loved it. I like it more than Pride and Prejudice. I stan a book with complex characters that you can't there's certain characters in that book that you're like, that you root for, and then they do something and you're like, oh, that like conflicts with something that I believe or whatever, but like you still want them to get together, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I loved it way more than Pride and Prejudice. I found it much sweeter, honestly, if only because I liked the depth. I finished Boundaries by Dr. Henry Cloud, which, holy crap, if you're ready for a drag, read that book. Unless you have, like, really great boundaries, in which you'll probably read it and be bored.
And you're probably not Leo also. I've yet to meet a person with good boundaries. Like really good, solid, consistent boundaries.
I can't wait for that person to be me. Because this is exhausting. So we read that. It definitely is helpful for anyone, I feel like. Like, it doesn't matter what your faith tradition is, but just know that it does come from a Christian perspective, but not like heavy-handed, I feel like. Like, it's more of like, here is biblical support that you can set boundaries. Like it gives you almost permission to set boundaries, because I think a lot of people see Christianity and are like, oh, you have to love your enemy, which means you can't ever set a boundary, which isn't true. So
yeah,
I did that.
I'm really good about that.
Oh yeah, it's so good. Okay, my God, I read so much. What the heck?
That's awesome.
I like to read cookbooks sometimes. People sometimes don't count them, but I definitely do. Like, I read cookbooks and don't cook the recipes. Like, I read them and I'm like, oh, this is an interesting way to do this. Or like, I like to read the ones that have little memoirs and stuff in them.
Yeah.
So I read Gordon Ramsay's cookbook, Cooking for Friends, because I love Gordon Ramsay. And I'm like sad to say that I was kind of disappointed, because like there was maybe two recipes I could ever actually see myself eating. Like, it was so bougie. It was so bougie.
I remember you telling me, like, one of the recipes was, like, roasted rabbit with, like, some side. And I'm like, why would I ever make that for my friends when I could put a casserole in the oven and just, like, hang out with them while it cooked?
I feel like it's a generational thing, too, though. Like, you know, like, I feel like our generation is just, like, we don't give it. Like, we don't care. Like, I'll make tacos. And, like, when I was in Mexico with my friends, we bought a bunch of meat. We made tacos, we made vegan refried beans out of black beans, we made regular refried beans, we made our own tortilla chips, you know, like we just like, but it wasn't like, and then like the guys were grilling, like vegan, hot dogs and stuff, because we had a few vegans that we were traveling with. And, like I would rather do that any day over like some bougie dinner.
Yeah. It's just a lot of work.
Oh my God.
And a like, lot of that stuff, like, is it accessible to you depending on, you know, obviously like how much money you make, but also where you live. Like if I want anything that's like considered specialty or even like ethnic almost, I have to go to like Whole Foods or like drive 40 minutes to go to an international market.
Yeah.
Because of where I live, that stuff just isn't accessible. So like roasted rabbit and stuff is great if you live in, you know, a really big city and you can afford nice things. But the rest of us will eat our Kraft mac and cheese. Thank you.
Oh my God. Right. Exactly. Like I love a good mac and cheese recipe. Like I love a good mac and cheese. I love just cheese, honestly. Yes. But like it was, and it wasn't bad. Like I don't want to say that it was a bad cookbook, but like even the desserts, I was like, oh, I don't know about that. Like, oh, sister. So I gave it 3 stars because I felt weird not giving it 3 stars. Like there's nothing inherently wrong with it. You know, it was just like, then I decided to go back to some of my middle grade love because I needed a break. And I read Power Play by Ridley Pearson, which is the 4th book in the Kingdom Keepers series. I've talked about it on here before, but basically it's about these teenagers who Disney hires and they become what's called DHIs. So basically they are these like holographic, like tour guides. So it's like something that like Disney has all around the parks and you can, you know, get this tour guide to tell you about things. So, but these are real kids that actually do it. And it turns out that the DHI program was actually set up because all of the Disney characters are real. And, the villains are also called the Overtakers and they want to take over the parks and, you know, get rid of the magic, of course. So, this is the 4th book in the series. Each book takes place in like a different like Disney area. This one actually took place in Disney Quest, which no longer exists. It was like a arcade situation. The big overtakers have been caught. So now Cruella De Vil and the Evil Queen and Frollo are trying to figure out where they've hidden away their you know, their leaders, their fearless leaders, Maleficent and Chernabog. So, I was like nervous because books 2 and 3, I read physically and was like, oh God. Like, so I decided to try the try the audio just because I needed a break. And the audio was really good. So if you need like a nice little break, I think I gave it like 3 stars maybe. Not because it was bad, just because it was exactly what I needed. I gave it 4. I reread Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which is always an interesting thing to do now that you're closer in age to some of the teachers than you are to the students. Mm-hmm. It's also weird when you teach students that age. The second and third book were especially, I'm on the third book now, but I read the second book as well. And that was interesting to read and like certain things that the kids say. It's almost like when you, have you watched The Little Mermaid recently, no, Hannah?
Okay.
So did you watch it as a kid?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So there's this line that like, as a kid, you are like 100% on the side of Ariel, right?
Yes.
And Ariel goes, she says, "I'm not a child, Daddy. I'm 16 years old." And now that I'm like older, I'm like, mm-hmm. You are a child. It's like horrifying. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, I've become that person. That's like, you'll understand when you get older. Like, I don't want to be that person ever. But yeah, so I actually gave it 4 stars as opposed to the 5 it originally had. I'm trying to be more honest. Not because it was bad, just because, I don't know, it was a 4-star book. Like, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It wasn't like outstanding.
No, I mean, it was good. It brought back memories and stuff, but it didn't. And I've recently come to terms with the fact that like my book ratings might change over time, like especially books that I reread. Like there will be times where certain books will be 5 stars and years where that goes for you, you know, unchecked. And then that might change, you know, because life changes. So I'm trying to like give myself grace with that.
Of course.
Okay. I also read, God, I read so much. It's like embarrassing. I read I finished The Lion Game by Sarah Shepard, which, you know, is if you're looking for something twisty, turny, kind of like Pretty Little Liars, but less books, I think there's only like 4 or 5 in this series. This is definitely the way to go. Basically, there's a girl who is a foster kid, and then there's another girl, her name's Sutton, and it turns out that Sutton has died. You find this out in the very beginning. It's fine. And this other girl is her long-lost twin. Like, they were put up for adoption or whatever. So she goes to Arizona because she doesn't realize that Sutton's dead and basically has to take over Sutton's life because she's told kind of like by the A figure or whatever. If you watch Pretty Little Liars, you know what I mean? But like the A figure is basically like, you need to keep pretending that you're her or you're next. And so it's like, ooh, who killed her? Ooh, like, yeah. So I gave it 3 stars. It was a good palate cleanser. I truly think sometimes when you read these long books that you need books that are shorter. And even if they're kind of like twisty turny, like somewhat lighthearted twisty turny is so helpful to feel like you've actually finished something. Like, I truly feel like the key sometimes to getting out of a slump is finding something that you can finish.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just like a novella, you know, that takes you 30 minutes to read. Like, if you're someone who reads a lot and you just haven't been finishing books like you're used to, finding something that you can finish is like, oh, okay, like I can finish a book. Like, I don't know why, at least for me, it's a mental game.
Yes. Slumps are always a mental game. So it's all about figuring out what does your brain need.
And your brain, a lot of the times, won't tell you. So just, you know. Brains are annoying like that. My brain rioted against my body at one point for a period of like 3 months. So, you know, just like.
Just for fun.
Yeah, just for funsies. Okay. I'm like embarrassed. Okay. I also reread The Illuminae Files by Amy Kaufman and Jay Kristoff.
Oh, God.
I'm currently rereading Gemina, which is the second book in the series. I literally reread this series usually once a year. The audio is a full cast audio. Highly recommend. Also recommend, if you're going to buy the physical book, that you buy the hardback, not the paperback, because these books are huge and you will love how they're formatted. They're formatted beautifully. But for some reason, my paperback copy just like could not hold up to the weight of the book, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to actually repurchase Illuminae in the hard copy. And I have read all 3 of them, and I pre-ordered Amy Kaufman's first book in her newest series, which is no longer pre-ordered because like the second one is out. I haven't read it yet, but and got the limited edition prequel to the series. So if that says anything about how much I love this series, it is seriously one of my favorites of all time. The first one is amazing. The third one is amazing. The second one is like meh to me, like in comparison, but it's so necessary for the plot line. So
yeah,
just
yeah,
bear with it. And then this one was just kind of like, it's been on my list and it came up as available at my library. It's called Searching for Sarah Rector, The Richest Black Girl in America by Tanya Bolden. It is an Own Voices book. It is a picture book setup, but it has a lot of words. Basically, it's a nonfiction book. Sarah Rector was part of a group of Black people who became part of the Native American tribes. And when the Native American tribes were divvying up land, because Sarah Rector was considered part of the tribe, she got a parcel of land. And we've talked about this in our previous episodes, because you read Killer Flowers of the Osage Moon, right, Hannah?
Killers of the Flower Moon, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. So it's basically the same, I believe it's the same Native American tribe. And so they found oil on her land and she became like one of the youngest, richest person in America. But because she was underage, she had to have like a guardian through the court. So it kind of talks about how like they were trying to figure out, are these people actually spending money for her? Are they spending money for this? And then at one point she just kind of like no one knows where she is. It's not a bad ending to the story. Like, I mean, it's not great, but like she doesn't die. So like if you like want something to share with your kids, like that could be a really good book to start with. I got it from the library, but I read it on my computer because of all the pictures it wouldn't move over to Kindle well. I've read One for the Money by Janet Ivanovich, which is the first in the Stephanie Plum series. Guys, this book was hilarious. Like, I did not expect this book to be funny. I expected it to be like a James Patterson-esque, like, woman hunting down, you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
National Treasure, Da Vinci Code vibe. Yeah, exactly. This book was not that at all. Basically, Stephanie Plum is a woman who, you know, needs to pay her bills, relatable, has lost her job, relatable. I have not lost my job, but it feels like I've lost my job considering I have not been in a classroom in like 4 months. So she decides that, you know, logically the next best thing to do is to become a bounty hunter.
Yes, naturally.
Naturally. She decides that she's going to take on this case for Frank Morelli, who also so happens to be the man she lost her virginity to.
Oh.
So she lives in this like small town and she's basically working as like a bail bondsman, like trying to catch like people who skipped out on their bail. But she is also still solving mysteries or whatever. It is so funny. And honestly, as I was reading it, as you guys know how much I love the Sammy Keyes series, it honestly felt like what Sammy would do when she's like grown. Cause it was funny and like kind of raunchy in certain points, but like appropriately raunchy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But like so funny that I was like, it was like a good connection for me to be like, oh, like this is who Sammy could be when she gets older. You know what I mean? There's a million books in that series. So if you need to space out, it is so good. And I honestly think it would be perfect for like a mother-daughter book club situation. Like if you're looking for something to read with your mom, these books have been out since the 90s. So if your mom's a reader, she's probably read some of them. But how fun would it be to be like, as an adult, go back and read a silly series with your mom that you can now appreciate because you're an adult. I did read Over the Top by Jonathan Van Ness, who I stand corrected in the last podcast. I thought he preferred they, them pronouns. He prefers he, him pronouns. And it was amazing. Get the audio. It's only 3 hours long. It's the greatest thing you'll ever read. He talks about sex work. He talks about HIV. He talks about being non-binary. It's just amazing. I read Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. I have a new appreciation for this book because kind of like how I mentioned my brain rioted against me. I never truly understood how horrifying it is to have like sections of your life like that you don't remember. Mm-hmm. And I remember like seeing Ginny talk about it in the movies and hearing it in the book. But I never really, like, I haven't read this book since what happened to me. So I had a really rare brain condition. And I'm dealing with a lot of medical trauma because of that. But there are literally aspects within about a month that I just don't, like, I don't remember. I completely blacked out, and it's because my brain pressure was so high. So reading that book and being able to appreciate genuinely, like, the terror that would be like for a 12, like I can't imagine going through that at 12. Like you wake up and you're like, I don't remember what happened. And you have people telling you what you did. It's like horrifying, but I can't even imagine doing that at 11. Like, and so like since living through it, I have a new appreciation for that book. So I gave it 5 stars, Tenet of Wildfell Hall, 3 stars. And then, we're just not even going to talk about that. It was fine. It was fine. If you want to read it, it's not a bad read. It's just like watch the BBC the BBC series, and you'll like kind of get what's going on, and you'll like that better anyway. If you watch Sherlock, have you ever watched Sherlock?
Yes, I did watch Sherlock.
Okay, so you know the guy who plays the police officer that works with them? I can't remember his name.
Yes.
Okay. He plays Mr. Huntington, which is the bad guy in Tenet of Wildfell Hall.
Ooh.
But it's like from years ago, so he's young. And basically half of this story has to do with how alcohol will ruin your life. Wow. So he plays a man that is clearly an alcoholic. He abuses his wife. It's just bad all around. So it's a dark book. And then speaking of dark books, I finished 5 Days at Memorial by Sherry Spoon, which I gave 4 stars. It was really, really good. Really, really interesting. It's about, there was a hospital during Hurricane Katrina that basically got kind of left to its own devices, and the doctors ended up, the patients that they felt could not be rescued or wouldn't survive rescued. I mean, I would rather just be blunt and say that they euthanized them. And it's less about there are parts that are about the moral dilemma that presents and more about the facts, like here's what happened.
Yeah.
It is not pandemic triggery except for the epilogue, which is really not that necessary to read. It kind of talks about just like how that event brought medical ethics into question. And then they do actually discuss like New York State pandemic procedures. So like, if that is triggering for you, skip the epilogue. But if you're into like true crime, like, I think the best comparison I have is almost like Bad Blood by John Carreyrou. Like how it was that. Mm-hmm, yeah. Like it's a very similar vibe.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. Like it's a very similar vibe. Okay. I'm going to make the rest of this really quick. I am trying to read the Bible in a year and I'm 42% done. I'm working on a book called Midnight in Broad Daylight by Pamela Rottner Sakamoto, which is a true story of two families, one of which, both of which were living together. And then, one group decided to go back to Japan and settle at their ancestral home in Hiroshima. And the others decided to remain in the Pacific Northwest in the 1930s. We all know what happens next. The families in the Pacific Northwest end up at internment camps, and some of them end up actually serving in the U.S. Army. And then, you know, the other part of the family is in Hiroshima. So it's going to be a very uplifting book. I'm about 57% of the way done with that. I'm reading a book called Merchants of Doubt by Naomi Oreskes, which is basically about how big companies have manipulated science to get them the results that they want. Anything from climate change to actually cigarettes. It was really interesting. They mentioned that Nazis had done a lot of studies and found that cigarettes did cause cancer. Hitler would not allow people to smoke around him. And then when we won World War II, people were trying to use these studies, and Big Tobacco basically said, those are the Nazis. Like, how can you trust any of their studies?
Wow.
And so they discounted all of those studies. And that's why it took us another almost 2 decades to actually know that smoking cigarettes can cause cancer. The Nazis had this figured out in the 30s, which is wild. Oh, yeah, I know.
I could go on a rant here, but I will not.
Well, we will not. We will not. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban is happening. Goldfinch is almost done. Gemina is a little over halfway through. And then I started this middle grade book called Echo by Pam Munoz Ryan. I had wanted to teach this book, but I wasn't sure. It is really good. It's a World War II book. It's got some magical realism. It's done very well, told from the perspective of a little boy. I am only about 19% in, so like I have a feeling of what it's about, but I'm not sure yet, so I'm not going to give you a synopsis. And then I'm thinking I'm going to start the next Kingdom Keepers book. That was a lot. I talked a lot.
That's good, though. I'm glad you've been reading, because I know that was hard, you know, for a while. At the start of the pandemic, you were having a hard time getting some books in, so it's nice to see that you got your groove back.
Yes, it's nice to feel like I have my groove back a little bit.
Yeah.
So like I've read 47 books this year. I'm 5 books ahead of schedule. So
look at you.
Hey, you know, but I did stop reading my classics. Oopsies. I can't do it right now.
Nope. Who can?
No, I can't. I literally cannot. So I'm trying to provide like some levity and some, you know, just something.
Yes.
I just need something that's not, I'm ready for the Goldfinch to be over.
You're so close.
Oh my God. I'm kind of enjoying this part right now, but there was this big twist that happened. I'm obviously not going to tell you what it is because you're reading it. But like this big twist happened and I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, are you freaking kidding me? So I, and not like a good, are you freaking kidding me? Like, are you for
real?
It's
like, are we really doing this?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like I was so just like, I was annoyed by it, to be honest. This book is so long. So long.
I need to start it. I actually haven't started it yet.
Oh my God. God bless.
I like whenever I read chunksters like that, I like break out the tabs.
Oh my God. Yeah.
The good thing about it is
that there's like different parts, and then there are like, it says like chapter one, but then it will be like each chapter is divided into smaller sections. So it'll be like one or two. So when I read a chapter of it, I just read one of those little sections.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Cause I just can't.
Yeah. I feel that.
This is like, I want to read A Little Life. You've read A Little Life.
I have read A Little Life. A Little Life. So I choose a chunkster every summer because I'm a psychopath. And so I read A Little Life last summer. It took me 3 tries to finally get through it. It was slow. It probably took me almost 200, 300 pages to really get into it. But it devastated me. Like everybody says, it's a really sad book. I'm not usually a book crier, so I was expecting to be like, oh, that's sad. Mm-hmm. I was like weeping during, like I had to put the book down. I was crying so hard.
I've heard that it is like trauma porn almost.
I definitely can see that.
But then I've heard that people have said like, but then when they finish it, they feel like there's a hole in their life.
Yes, for sure. I finished it and I was like, now what do I do? So I read a book about Vietnam because that was the only thing that made sense. But yeah, it's, I don't know. It's an interesting book. The main character is like definitely, the author definitely lets him like sit in a lot of suffering and it can be really overwhelming. And there are like a ton of triggers about abuse and self-harm and suicide. Like,
oh God. It's not a book I need to be reading right now.
You have to be in like a really good mental place to read it, and you need to like read it in the sunshine.
while you're getting your vitamin D.
Yeah, like really set yourself up for it in the best possible way. but it was good. It like was a really moving, really impactful book.
Yeah, I want to read it.
It's not a vacation read.
Yeah. I want to read it, so I would like to, but I don't think at this point it's the, you know, smartest.
I wouldn't recommend it at this point.
No, at this point, I think it's going to – I mean, at this point, I'm reading literally middle grade books about, like, Disney. So, I mean, if that
– I don't think you want a little life right now.
No, I don't. I really, really don't. Okay, so that's it from me. That, like, my freaking long ramble. I feel like I talk so much. But I guess this is a podcast, so I guess it makes sense.
What we do.
Hey, you know. So yeah, should we just like wrap it up, I guess?
Yep. That's all I have.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. You can find us on Instagram at checkingoutpod. You can email us at checkingoutpodcast@gmail.com. You can support the show in the show notes. There's a link. If you could also rate and review the show, we would very much appreciate it. That's how other people can find the podcast. Check out Lauren's book. You can find the links to that in the show notes. Find it on Amazon, find it on Kindle Unlimited. It's only like a 2-hour read, so it's definitely something that you could just power through. And we would love to see, tag us in your pictures if you decide to read her book. We would love to pass those on to her. We do have a Facebook community now. Checking out discussion group. You are welcome to join us in there, talk about books, whatever you're reading. I'm kind of sort of taking a break from social media, like sort of I'm in and out. But I don't have the apps on my phone right now. So if we take a little bit to get back to you, just know that that is why. Am I missing anything?
No, I think that's all of it.
Okay. Well, I think next time we are probably going to do an episode about own voices and just books that you can read, anti-racist books that you can read. Hannah and I are just so mentally drained right now with our mental health issues. We just could not do research. And we also noticed that you guys seem to like the episodes where we just talk about what we're reading. So
always here to do an episode where we just talk and do no research.
Honestly, like that's the best episode. We were like, oh, we have to read this book and talk about it. And once I like looked at the numbers, like basically you guys liked our first episode a lot. And then you like our quarantine reads episode a lot. So like, we'll just do more of those.
Yeah. Tell us what you want to hear us rant about.
For real. We'll do like, it. Yeah. Hannah and I rant over text messages all the time. So we might as well record it.
Bring you in on the fun.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you next time. Bye.